Good morning. It is Sunday, March 20th, 2022. I'm answering a question, really, one would always pose to themselves, I hope, a reality check. And it's why? Why do I find the claims made by the Russian Ministry of Defense more credible than the ones made by the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense? And that's on a range of things, and not just the Ministry of Defense. Let me just include general claims made by their propaganda efforts. And people who've been listening to this channel, first of all, have a good idea that I'm saying everything is propaganda. Everything is propaganda because all the information put out by official and semi-official sources is meant not simply to inform you and educate you, but it's meant to give a certain point of view that supports their angle, that supports their cause. And that doesn't mean that the information is false, but of course, one includes some information that leads one way and doesn't include information that might lead another way. So it's, if you're a person who believes that omitting information are lies, then both sides are lying. But if you're a person who believes that there are gradations of lies, and that there are lies that are dirty dog lies, and then there are lies that are lies by omission, then it's different. Also, how does this work? Because we're really talking about propaganda, aren't we? And the nature of your propaganda is going to relate to the temperature of the rhetoric in your country. What are the things that have already become acceptable in your country? What are the things that politicians have been saying verbally? What kind of threats have they made? And is there some connection between the threats that are made and the things that we find? I think so. Not only do I think so, I believe that that is the case. In World War II, there are not always orders, found in the records of, the German command going down to the lesser units in the field down the chain, to exterminate this village per se. These were practices in war from a culture that had developed within a society over the period of the preceding 15 and 20 years by the time you're in the mid 40s. And there are things that don't need to be said and things that people do because of the permissiveness and encouragement in a social climate, right? When you saw this big Trump-esque speech, it was a giant like Trump rally, but it was Putin. That was like an alternate reality, wasn't it? Looked like they had the stadium filled. I don't know if that was 50, 75,000, and then there was, 100,000 people around it, and it looked like several hundred thousand more had mobilized. Over 500,000, I'm counting. And what was said to everybody, you have to understand the Russian mentality with this. And of course, there's many different mentalities. I think this is really important to understand because a lot of the English language pro-Russian blogosphere, in the English language, that's like kind of conservative and might make sense to people, is super obsessed with questions and ways of thinking about what Russia is and who its enemies are through actually a very neo-Nazi kind of lens. And those ideas are actually pretty abhorrent in mainstream Russia. Like, of course, every society, when you have hundreds of millions of people, you have tens of millions of people in cities, you have subcultures, and they may even be quite prolific, and they may be even quite popular in the relative scheme of foreign audiences because it speaks to how foreign audiences think. But within Russia, there is not an obsession with people of a particular religious, Abrahamic, mosaic-based religion, or Turkic tribes, or empires that settled in the Ukraine from the Caspian Sea basin in the 8th century and adopted one of these early Abrahamic or mosaic, right, religions. That's not an obsession. It's not what people in the Russian army or in the Russian bureaucracy or your basic Russian patriot who goes to work every day and understands the importance of this conflict for them. They're not thinking this is the JWs or the KHZs. Do you understand? That kind of stuff actually tarnishes an understanding of what the conflict is about. So when you saw this Putin speech, he said, the first thing he said, I think it was in the first sentence, was the multinational people of Russia, or our multinational Russian society or state, whatever the term was. And it does matter what term they use. I'm coming at you, BC here, before coffee. So this idea of a multinational, because Russia is not an ethno-nationalist state, and I condemn my critics and those who have slandered me in the press, who have written in, even had to retract a claim made in the SPLC's website under threat of a suit. And many people came to my defense around that from the left and the right, because these were disgusting claims trying to attach me to ideas that I don't have in support. At the time, as well, of a state that doesn't have ideas or a belief system that these people think. And like I said, the intelligence agencies manipulate these information lines and they encourage them on both sides. Why do you think such a big site like Russia Insider, why do you think that guy, Charles Bossman, who founded that, was kicked out of Russia after defrauding legitimate media investors who wanted a basic, like you have Business Insider and then you have Russia Insider, and closed operation, moved back to Connecticut, left his wife there in Russia, I think. And transformed the website into a anti-Semitic Russian nationalist conspiracy theory. Russians are not obsessed as a group, as groups, as multinations. They're not obsessed with what happened to them in 1917 and the Bolsheviks and we're all JWs and blah, blah, blah. That's not an operating obsession of that people en masse. Okay. And it's not the belief system of the state. Where am I going with this? Well, look, on the Ukrainian side, post-Kuchma, there has been a temperature rising and rising and rising to a boil that has dehumanized people of Ukraine that are suspected ethnic Russians, that are in fact ethnic Russians, because people have different last names, you can't always tell. And anyone with Russian sympathies. And whereas the idea of Russia, both what's promoted in the civil society and by the state, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about what edgy countercultural conspiracy theorists in a coffee house or a bar who run even maybe popular blogs think. We're talking about what is the permissible discourse, what is the temperature in civil society, what is the common stuff that you find in the basic mainstream columns written in the normally read papers and online newspapers and opinion journals, right? And it's a very, very different, it's two very different stories, very different stories. These are not two states. By the way, also, this is not a region that's just so known for conflict. That I first of all, that kind of Orientalist view isn't even true about the Middle East. But it's not true at all. This is not a historically war-torn part of the world where the people have these historical enmities or whatever. That's not even do you know the history of the, you know. That's like saying, oh, well, we can't expect France to be stable because, you know, they had a war with Germany in 1940 something, and then right, just 20 years before that, and then, or 25 years before that, and then, oh, and then, you know, the 19th century, England's been at war almost every day of its existence. But you don't say that that's the reason that justifies having no concern if England begins to implode. Or if England is attacked, it's just not, that's just not, you know. I think that line of thinking maybe only works as a mindset in the United States, where we had the Civil War and the Mexican-American War, and that's it. You had a lot of Indian wars before that, that's it. So think about it like that. This is not, you know, a region where the people just hate each other and always have these problems. I mean, unless you understand this anomaly of peace and the general trajectory of human activity and wars in general, but I digress. So when I look at propaganda claims, first of all, I know that both sides make little propaganda lies, and I try to limit them. Things that are shown without context or are just video of things that the caption doesn't establish that, or the video doesn't establish what the caption says, I just don't share that. And I just don't. Also, captured soldiers being forced to say, I love Ukraine, or hail Ukraine, or hail Russia. I think that's disgusting on both sides as propaganda. But oh, don't get me wrong. I know when guys are in the field and their buddies have been killed and they capture guys and they want to, like, you know, those guys, they're like not executing them, which is a war crime. They want to, maybe some of them at that moment. Those are real feels. In real conflict. And so, in the scheme of things, humiliating them and slapping them around the face, punching them in the nose, beating some information out of them, and then telling them, and then making a video saying, whatever, we were forced to come out here, we actually hate Ukraine. Like, I know that it doesn't, it may be true, it's probably not. I mean, I'm in no place to say. Maybe it's very true, maybe, probably it is, I don't know. But I don't put it out there. First of all, it's just not informative to the outcome of the war. I consider that to be like a type of abuse pornography. And I'm not saying that if I was involved in the conflict that I would be above that. I'm not saying that at all. You capture guys and they've been whatever and you beat them up and vent a little bit, or frustrations, your buddies are killed. I'm not above that. I'm just saying, since I'm not in the thick of it, I can see that's not what I think is, the kind of community or what ought to be fostered or to be shared. It also happens to be a violation of the Geneva Conventions, even to reproduce it. Okay. And I try to keep things clean. But why do I think these general claims about civilian treatment, and I don't think either side practices purity of arms, but there are obviously the human shields, and I have shown those videos where there's obvious human shields being used because they themselves are putting themselves up in kindergartens and high schools and or in people's apartments, and you saw the one with people all on the floor. Because if you were there in Ukraine or had followed Ukrainian mainstream media, this is why it's so important to compare apples to apples. Mainstream statements from mainstream representatives in their parliament and the things that the mainstream newspapers say are at such a boiling temperature of calling for ethnic cleansing, violence, incitement, destruction of a whole people. This is not the poor little Ukraine. That's just part of the critical race theory of the Ukrainian belief system. That's the accepted civil society belief system. It's the things that politicians of the leading and elected party say, not the little fringe we have four seats or something guy. Okay, this is like, and people like Yulia Tymoshenko, who's a former leader of Ukraine just recently in the scheme of things, has personally said, we're gonna kill every Russian, all of them, men, women, and children, the whole thing burnt to the ground. We're going to secure the Euro-Atlantic sphere from here to Moscow through total annihilation of these people and that land. And that's not a direct quote, but that's a really damn near close paraphrase. Really, really damn near close paraphrase. I mean, that's just about what's been said, almost verbatim. You can never really translate anyway, word for word, from most Slavonic languages to English because of the difference. So, and when you look at that similar, when you compare apples to apples of the discourse in Russia, in what's accepted, in what political leaders say, who are leading major parties in the parliament and the mainstream press, because what I said about Ukraine, that is the mainstream press. Do 40% or 60% or 70% of Ukrainians not agree with that insanity? I would hope so. And I would like to think probably so. And my understanding of these things is that it's probably also likely that the majority of Ukrainians, or just a strong minority of them, don't agree that every Russian should be wiped off, the planet. But this woman who said these things was elected to the highest office just recently in the scheme of things, a decade ago, 12 years ago. And so don't, these are not the same. So yeah, separate these things. There's a difference between little lies, lies of omission, propaganda. I know the Russians try to show things like we found all these weapons, and I like anyone who knows, like of course they have found some weapons, but they reframe things. When they say, oh, these were weapons that were stored away by this battalion in this village so they could use them, like we don't know that. They're, in any given village in most parts of Ukraine, there's still 10, 20, 30% of the population that would be very kind of like, these Russians and stuff. I mean, in most of the areas, even in the, I mean, talking about the lands east of the Dnieper. And, there's always some idea that if the Russians occupy a village, then the people know where there's a weapon stat, cache, and they can engage in some armed resistance or something. And that hasn't happened, but it's perfectly reasonable that planners of the resistance to the Russian incursion would have expected that to be reasonable and would have made provisions for those things. And, so when I see they find weapons and they say, "Oh, Azov was hiding his weapons in this guy's garage and the guy was forced to keep them there," I don't believe that per se. I don't disbelieve it. This ain't a trial. You know what I mean? I'm not weighing the evidence. They ain't a jury. I'm just saying I don't think it's credible enough to share. And it could be propaganda enough that I shouldn't share. So that's my approach to it. But those kind of things, because like police lie about their busts and how they put things together to show. And I like when they just show, we went into this and they show, like, here's a Nazi, and they just show, like, on a table, like, here's a Nazi flag and some guns. And like, that photograph can be taken anywhere. And also, like, who cares, right? It just, that's very low level stuff. That's not the same thing as, who's killing civilians or whatever. And so that's really what it gets to. The mood and the acceptable discourse of the society, which always trickles into the military strongly, because military is just made up of people of the society. They don't have this view that Ukrainians should die, and Ukrainians are a subhuman race and are a false this or whatever, an occupier, and all these things. They just don't have that view. That's just not a view that's been promoted and grown in the Russian discourse, okay? And likewise, or rather conversely, with Ukraine, it's like kill them all. So, and you've seen just too many leading figures in the discourse in Ukraine make these ugly, vile things. And it's people aren't mistaken about what Nazism is. They're not confused about the lengths that Nazis would go to. I mean, they might be confused about the desirability of having a Nazi state. And I'm not saying that the entire state is Nazified, but it is enough Nazified, like a cancer, that you've got to probably demolish the whole thing to because that 30, 40% of it isn't its own clear block. It's like veins, it's like veins of this cancer that are deep entwined of the of this otherwise semi-normal state, but you can't extract those veins from the state. You have to reconstruct the state without that cancer. And that's my view. So that's really, how I see the difference and why I think that these Ukrainian claims about Russians doing things with civilians is not believable. But when you have civilians leaving, when you have human shields leaving their Ukrainian, armies that need human shields, and they're trying to prevent people from leaving, yeah, they shot at them, of course. Whereas Russians are already working in this extreme overtime, because it is an incursion and their armies are rolling in, and so they have to be as much as possible welcomed, as liberators, because they don't have it. Number one, they're not trying to create Lebensraum or have, they're not on some ethnic cleansing quest. They want these people to be the people, right, in a pacified and pro-Russian Ukraine, and that those sentiments are not going to happen if you brutalize the native population, which in these places that they've gone in to occupy or liberate, take your pick, are 60, 70, 80% Russian. So, yeah, that's, I think, good enough. That's good enough of some background on how that is. And I just want to reiterate that that obsession with JW and KHZ, and stuff is not the operating framework. And you know, we delete those kind of comments, and we will continue to, and we'll ban people who are obsessed with that. And it really is an obsession. It really is an obsession. It's one thing, and I'm not saying this is a difference between, there's many differences here, by the way. There are things that are true, and then there's the fact that this is not a free speech zone, because Telegram is not the First Amendment. And I'm not even sure if you're American and if you're allowed to say those things wherever the hell you're from. But just because on paper you have that right doesn't mean that in function that you actually have that right. And you know, numbers are numbers when you look at like whatever and who's, you know, but to draw these broad conspiratorial deep histories that span, you know, 1400 years and stuff, it's just inaccurate, and it's so damaging just also for yourself. And I'm not here to regulate what's good for you, and you're not here to be told what's bad for you. But as it is my channel and I can share my view in this way, I will say in my opinion it's bad for you, because we should be focusing on primarily ourselves in terms of improvement. And we should look as much as possible at the good in other people. And we should be looking for the things in ourselves that need to improve. And if we keep thinking that all the evil in the world comes from people of a different faith or a different ethnicity, and we start thinking in generalities, like we start thinking in groups, like these are the good people and these are the bad people, you only hurt yourself. It's only going to harm your own spiritual, emotional, and psychological development. It's very bad to see the world that way, because then all the little ugly, snarky things that you think and say, and you think that you're the victim, and you think that you're the good guy, and that's just an inverse of exactly the ugly climate in Ukraine of these neo-Nazis who think that they're the victims and that all the evil in the world is what's been done to them, and that justifies all the evil that they do unto others in the name of justice, in the name of revenge, in the name of doing good. The best good that we do is to confront what lies within us. Peace.